in a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's actually, it's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy.
The number one fuckboy. All you gotta do is trust me.
It's me, Johnny G, the number one fuckboy, ruining my neighbor's afternoon on this lovely Friday. That's right, it's me, screaming in the middle of the day as everyone works from home. Joining me also in the High and Mighty studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabriel. Arthur, give him a shout out. Also joining me, first-time guest, long-time social media correspondents. We are pen pals, and now we are podcast pals. You know him as Net3Kirk, and I know him as Jason Concepcion. Put your fucking hands together, shitheads. He's here, baby.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's fucking.
I just spit all over my mic.
It's okay. Listen, it's fine. This has been a long time in the making. I would also like to apologize to my neighbors who have to listen to me scream in my office, which I think abuts a bedroom on the other side of the wall several times a week. So apologies to them. It's great to finally be here with you.
Yeah, dude. It's so exciting.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you mentioned that you were from Long Island, Nassau County, I was like, well, fucking A, dude. We got to get into it. Yeah.
Hempstead Turnpike in the house.
Fuck, dude.
Tri-County Flea Market in the house.
Damn, dude. That's
Jones
where I bought
Beach.
Magic the Gathering cards, dude. Jones Beach is where I worked for five summers. Field 6, Field 4. I worked them.
Wait,
I hung
you worked
out there.
You worked at Jones Beach. I worked at Jones Beach for four summers. Field 6 and 4. I can't, mostly Field 6 and occasionally loaned out to Field 4 and then the East Bathhouse.
Were you a brown shirt?
Let's cut it. I was not. I was like, I emptied the garbage cans and stuff and went around and cleaned shit and like picked the beach, as we said in the parlance of New York State parks.
Oh, that's wild. What years was that by any chance?
So that's going to be like 94. So it's like high school and junior high school, like 94 to 96.
Okay. Yeah. I was at Field 6 from like, I was at the West Bathhouse pool in like 01. Yeah. 2000, I was at Hexter State Park. 01, I was at West Bathhouse pool. 02, I was 02 through like 04, I was Field 6. And then 05, I was Field 4 for just one summer.
Fuck Hexter is for the little kids. Fuck Hexter, man. Hexter is nothing. There's no action in Hexter.
No, that's where the rookies go because no one wants to work there. And that's how you learn what a parkway is on Long Island is when you take the Southern State and the park is at the, like you're driving on a highway. I've never gone that far east on it until my first day of work at Hexter Park. And I'm driving on the Southern State and it just pulls into a parking lot at the end. And you're like, what? This is where it goes?
Let me tell you an absolutely crazy job that I had to do once because one of my like captains was an absolute piece of shit. I had to take a push mower and a can of gas and mow the edge of the parkway. Because they go out with the big riders, right? And they mow the center of it and the big sides, but they miss the edge. So he's like, I want you to take this push mower and mow like five fucking miles, like crazy shit to
on
the
Ocean
third
Parkway?
Turnaround. Yes, to the
what
third
the
turnaround.
Fuck, dude?
To the third turnaround, cross, and then come back on the other side and mow down that side.
Fuck that. That is so... I love fucking Jones Beach is like, all right, you're 16. Go do this. It's
yeah.
like, wait, what?
Go, yeah, go mow 5 miles carrying a gas can. Here, I'll give you a walkie-talkie so if you need anything. It was just like wild shit. Jones Beach, baby. Wow.
Here's a question I like to ask Long Islanders. How long after you got your driver's license did it take you to go down to Ocean Parkway at night and fucking pedal to the metal? That was like a big thing for us. It was like, it felt so safe to drive as fast as you wanted down there at night.
I mean, it is safe, as the Long Island serial killer would tell you. That's it's a great place to dump bodies. There's no one out there, and you can just absolutely floor it down there. I did that. It was definitely like pretty soon. So I got my learner's and then my driver's license in the winter. So we were out there like a month later. Very easy.
A buddy of mine beat me to having, before I had my driver's license, when I still had my learner's permit, he got his driver's license and we took his Jetta down there and went 90. We're like, he's legally allowed to drive for like 8 days and we went 95 miles an hour at 9 p.m. at night down the Ocean Parkway. I'm like, damn. And like, he would like later tell a friend like, yeah, dude, I took this car going 95. They're like, what? Did you have people in the car? They're like, he's like, yeah. They're like, thank God, because that car's too light to go that fast. You could like blow off the road. We were like, oh, all right.
It's perfect. I mean, it just goes dead straight until like you run into Fire Island. There's just nothing happening.
And
it was perfect.
Being a Jones Beach lifeguard and the park police, like, if they saw the whistle hanging in your thing, they knew you were running late. They'll let you drive fast. I would come down the Wanto Parkway just like, I had a Buick Century. My first car was an 89 Buick Century, and the speedometer only went up to 85, and I would just drive the Wanto Parkway with it rattling at 85, like, just vibrating, like, couldn't go any higher.
mine was an 88 Camaro, red Camaro.
Shit,
we got used. We got used somehow. That would just like, when I made left turns, like it had like some kind of early computer system or whatever, like fuel injection. I don't know what the fuck it was, but it would just turn off and then I would have to like restart it. And because it was like a computer everything or whatever, like that version of a computerized system was, like the steer, nothing would work. The steering, the brake, you would just be like ghost riding. And I would be like, oh fuck, I guess I'm dead now. This is it.
If I had to come to a stop off a parkway, off of after going 50 miles an hour in my Buick, it would shut down completely. And I would have to restart it, and it would take a few tries. Like, the amount of times that people went ham on me at the Roosevelt Field exit or the Source Mall exit off the fucking Meadowbrook, where I'm like, I'm sorry, the car stopped. I'm 17 years old trying to get it. I just want to go to fucking get free bourbon chicken at the food court. And someone's behind me like, you piece of shit. When I moved to LA, it was the first time I ever drove a new car in my entire life, because I leased a brand new car. And it was like, I had lived in New York City for like 8 years, so missed all these cars. And then I come out here and I just get a 2013 Jetta as my first car. And I'm just like, holy shit, driving a brand new car. It felt insane. I was like, oh, I'm driving in the internet. Like, I immediately felt... I had like only had old cars and also hadn't driven for 10 years. So everything was, I was like, whoa, touch screen. You know, I was like, the shit was like so stupid to me.
So you were a lifeguard. I worked for New York State, which meant like I emptied garbage cans. I would go out with the pick stick and pick up garbage on the beach. I'd drive that truck that would go down the beach and we'd throw like the garbage bags in the back. That's the shit that we would do. You guys were like the gods to us. We were like cleaning the bathrooms. We'd watch you guys. You'd have that little wooden house that you got to hang out in.
The shack, baby.
The shack.
Yeah.
We weren't even allowed near the shack.
No way.
We were absolutely not allowed to go even look at the shack. And it was a real object of like jealousy to look at the shack. But like, the fucking shack. Look at that's. They just jog out and they jog out and then they come back and they just hang out in the shack. They have TV in there. They have radio in there.
It was such a fucking, I never had status like that in my life. And I got it when I was like 18, and I'll never have that status again, where someone will come up to you where you're sitting there. I'm 19 sitting there in a Speedo and someone's like, excuse me, Mr. Lifeguard. Like an adult woman is like, I have some questions. And I'm like, they have no idea that I'm fucking like, I was like pissed my bed last night, like wasted. Like, and now I got to, and all of a sudden I've just like all this weird stat, and it goes to your head. The lifeguards think they're like fucking Navy SEALs. Yeah. Like,
you don't need to tell you, but let me tell you, you don't need to tell me that the lifeguards absolutely thought they were fucking Navy SEALs. You'd see them like after like a helicopter, I would say like once a week, maybe twice a month, there'd be somebody who got fucked up bad enough by either like boogie boarding, they like crunched their back boogie boarding, or a riptide, which was legitimately a big problem out there, that they'd have to land like the helicopter on the beach and then drag them out. And you'd see the lifeguards after that, and they'd be just like, yeah, what's up? Saved a life again. Yeah. I guess we saved a life again.
We love nothing more than like standing around with like our whistle on our bicep and our fucking Speedos, sunglasses, nothing else, being like, that was a hairy one. We better watch the fucking suck off of stand number S3. You know, we would just be like, 3 West is popping off today. Let's get some fucking vets out there. Like, we loved it so fucking much. And I truly is the best job I've ever had to date. And I've since been on television and get paid to smoke weed every once in a while. And like, still lifeguarding, making fucking like $15.85 an hour when I'm like 17 in 1999 is unreal.
Not only that, but then you get, like, if you work 4th of July, now you're getting the holiday time, and then they always ask you to work overtime. Now you're getting the time and a half. That was, like, the most money I'd ever seen. My one paycheck would be, like, my entire summer salary was you worked 4th of July.
Yes.
And you'd just be like, holy shit, I'm rich now.
Yeah, because that weekend they would just be like, we need everybody on, and you're doing 10-hour days, and 4th of July. And because it's a state job, it has, like, some good benefit, like, it has some protections, and it's like, oh, you get paid time and a half on 4th of July, Memorial Day, and because it's a busy day at the beach, they do need all hands on deck. So everyone's there getting paid time and a half. The vibe is, holy shit, it's going to be a hard day, but we're fucking making bank. Like, I'm fucking 17, and on a time and a half day, I'm making like $24 an hour.
It was incredible to do. It was incredible.
And the Jones Beach lifeguards get, our union, we have 3 hours off every day. Like, you're only in the stand, like, you're in the stand every other hour. It's not technically off. You're supposed to be training, or you're on backup, or you're doing shit. But so, like, you could, like, do the math where you're like, I'm getting paid $24 an hour today. I'm only in the stand for four. Like, you're like, I'm getting paid $50 an hour to be in the stand right now. And then I get an hour off. And you're just, you feel like a fucking king. And it fucked me up. Even the attitude, even the attitude of the patrons at the beach, they, like, there was no disrespect towards the lifeguards even.
There's
like,
zero. Zero.
Yeah. Because it was absolute like, zero. It is, you're at the beach. Like, everyone who's a Jones Beach guard would always say, like, you get paid to go where everyone kills to go on their day off. And it's like, oh yeah, that's like, you got to have that attitude. It's fucking, we're going to talk more about Long Island. It's not just me. Everyone who listens to this podcast is like, all right, great. He's screaming about lifeguarding again. But I will say, it's on my mind right now as I like reevaluate like what I'm looking for in a career and a life. And as I haven't been going outside or doing stuff that frequently for the last few months, I fucking put my email address down on the LA County lifeguards. I'm like, let me know when the next test is. I'm 40. I'm going to be 40 years old. I'm like, maybe I'll start lifeguarding. My wife is like, no, you have so many other things you should be doing that with your time. I'm like, bro, I think it starts at like $18 an hour.
Here's the thing about working at the beach. And, you know, when I worked there, I saw shit that I would never imagine seeing. I mean, people fucking in broad daylight, people fucking in the pool, people fucking in the bathhouse pool because like one corner of it, like the sun through the open roof throws one piece of shadow across one corner and people just act like, oh, nobody can see us fucking right here in this corner of the pool. Every day you'd see shit like that. Like people having wild fights.
Crazy riot
fights.
Yeah. Like I've been involved in like, I'm in a Speedo and me and four other lifeguards are like like beefing with dudes in jeans drinking Coronas, like, and I'm 19. These dudes are in their 20s, tatted up, Long Island up, you know, fucking traps and everything, screaming at us. And I'm like, are we about to? And like, of course, we're all 19-year-old hotheads. Like, yeah, let's fucking fight these guys on the beach where it is still Long Island. You know, like, I'm still ready to fucking give someone a two-piece on the beach if I have to.
So I worked at mostly Field 6, which is like the most. We're just going to give everybody the download on the fields on Jones Beach.
Yeah, it's Field the family was, beach.
It's the family beach, and it was very sought after because you didn't have to, like, you didn't park across the causeway. You parked right at the beach, and you just stepped out. You're on the sand.
Shortest so, parking, and also the shortest beach of sand of all of Jones Beach, too. So it's like from parking lot to water. It's why it's the family beach, because you got to carry 11 boogie boards and digging and shit like that. So that parking lot fills up by like 8 a.m. on the weekend.
8 a.m. Like it's a fucking madhouse. Add to that that it's the end of like the official beach. So if you just walk like 100 yards out past the dunes, that's where there's nude sunbathers. That's where there's just all types of stuff going on.
That was my first introduction to gay culture, was like being 19
right
and hearing about Field 9. Yeah. And I just didn't. You know, there was a gay bar in Belmar called Pal Joey's, but like we didn't know anything about it. I knew a couple of gay kids in my high school, but the first I really learned about like a bunch of old gay men hang out there and they sunbathe and I'm like, yeah. And like all the fucking, you know, homophobe hetero dudes are like, yeah, yeah, you can like see them fucking in the dunes and shit. It's disgusting. It's like, what? Who cares? What? We're fucking chicks in the shower here. Like that's like no different.
So we, that parking lot filled up quick, and what we'd had this system where we shut it, you know, we drag like a this like one of those like wooden horses across the entryway, and then we count cars until like 50 spots opened up, and then we let 50 in, and then we drag the thing closed again. When you pulled I did this was my job a lot. I'd be up there counting cars that came in, radio in, and then tell, and then they'd say, okay, let in 50. When you pulled that wooden barrier closed in front of car 50, it was like gonna be maybe a physical fight almost every time, like a coin flip, because people would fucking flip out.
Dude, they
lose
it. That is, and of course that's a job they give to like a fucking high school kid.
Yeah, I'm 16 years old. I'm like, what the fuck am I gonna, like they're going nuts, going nuts. One time I was not working at the top that day, but that happened, and these dudes jumped out with like machetes and shit and chased the kids back into the little like field shack. It was crazy. It was just a madhouse there all the time.
It's so funny you say that, because like I went, Field 6 was our beach before I became a lifeguard and eventually worked there, but Field 6 is where I went every day, because I've said this on the pod 100 times, but my dad worked like 3 to 11. So every morning he would get up, get us all up at 8 a.m., get us to Jones to Field 6, and we'd stay there till 1 p.m. every single day. So I was there 7 days a week from like 1994 until, I was there from like very frequently from like 88 until 2000, but every day from like, and so I just like, everything you're describing, I know about. I know about like the vibe of the city dudes when they come, and you're like,
"Oh, they're ready. They didn't come all that way to have you drag the fucking barrier in front of them. They're ready to go if you fucking drag that shit in front
of
them."
No, we drove here from the Bronx. We are not turning our music down. It's like you know, like, because that's like, there's no radios on Jones Beach. You're not allowed to have. I mean, that's maybe right. The rules have changed, but you're not allowed to have projected audio. So a lot of us would be like, "Hey, can you turn that down? We can't like hear the whistles of the other lifeguards." And people are like, "Fuck you, man!" It's like, now I gotta fight
you.
A guy. Yeah, a dude who's in jeans and boots at the beach is gonna kick my fucking ass.
Another big day was there was like a Greek day that was.
That was
just wild, like cars overturned shit.
That was the shit. I had never seen anything like that in my life. And it was very confusing to me at the time as a kid because I'm a dumb little, sheltered kid. It's called Greek Week or Greek Day.
Greek Week.
And everyone's black. And I was like, I don't understand this. Like, I thought they were Greek. And then my dad would be like, no, it's like fraternities. And
to me, I needed that explained to me as well.
But then even for me, my naivety was like, movies I watched were like white fraternity boys. And I was like, oh, black people are in fraternities too? And my dad was like, yeah, dude. And I was like, oh. And I worked with a dude named, I don't want to say his first and last name because who knows what kind of sketchy shit he's up to. But his name was Keith. He looked like Mark Henry, the wrestler. He was like this big, buff, strong dude. He owned a strip club, a restaurant, and was a Jones Beach lifeguard. He was a fucking hero amongst men. And he asked for Greek Day off every day. And there was some sort of pseudo racism in the lifeguard corps like, we need black people to work on Greek Day because we need like black people to be able to talk to black people. And that was like sort of, but he didn't do it because he took the day off every year, even though they wanted him to work, because he would go and sell 40s at, like, we would like see, like, Greek Day was so stressful because people would go so crazy, they'd get so fucked up. And then meanwhile, one of our own was like a lifeguard was like selling alcohol and making way more money than any of us that day. It was so crazy. Like cars on the beach. I remember being like, you can't even drive.
Cars on the beach.
Shit you've never seen on Long Island, on Jones Beach before.
I mean, I truly had never seen shit like that. I worked with a guy. There was a lot of, because we were would like, I guess there was some kind of like job fair thing where we'd recruit a lot of like kids from the city to come out. And this one guy, King, I think he was from Queens, came out. And this dude became my hero. He had this unbelievable scam. So he just did everything that the captain told them to do for like 2 weeks. Like, empty the trash bin, you got it. Like, pick the, all the way to the end of the beach, you got it. Like, just so that everybody got used to the idea that King is just crushing it. Wherever King is right now, he's crushing it. After that, he did that for 2 weeks. Then he would just go out to Field 9 and go to sleep in the dunes. Like, after that, he would come in and they'd give assignments out. He'd be like, okay, empty these trash cans over here. You got it. And then just disappear literally all day and go to sleep. I would find him out there and he'd just be like, what's up? I'm like, you're a fucking genius. This is incredible.
And he like set the tone that it's like, yeah, I'm a hardworking guy. And everyone's like, yo, King's busting his, where is King?
King's
like, he's probably doing extra shit.
He's busting his balls. Yeah. He's like fucking, he's, I don't know. I saw him pushing the dumpster. Like, this guy's fucking, he's killing it right now.
It's so fucking awesome. I love shit like that when you find like a small loophole at a weird job and you get to just like, oh shit, if you do this, this, and this, like you can get like an extra hour, like anything like that, any life hack, I just totally get. And then when you like get like adults and you meet like union guys who are like on, and you find that even when they're 50-year-old men, they're doing the same thing. It's like, no. Say you need a guy to help you with the ladder.
That's,
and
I love
two
that
guys
shit.
Have to go do it. Yeah, and then you can have a guy to go bullshit with you. And you're like, oh, genius. I fucking love it.
My brother is a nurse and he's trying to get,
my brother's
to be
a nurse too.
Yeah. And he's trying to be a nurse like on, for film shoots and for like Broadway and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And he was telling me, he's like, first of all, it's great because nothing ever, he's like, it's incredible. Nothing ever happens. And you got to sit out there like under the tent for like a certain amount of hours. Like it's that New York, that whole New York, like, here's how you game the system thing is a thing that I kind of miss.
Me too.
Because it's like, I miss those kind of conversations where it's like, all right, here's what you do, kid. I'll tell you how to do it. Because those people are just all around you on Long Island.
I've said this a lot, that Long Island is full of people who treat whatever they do like it's the mafia. Like, truly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know teachers who are like, bro, the trick is if you get a summer school class, you teach that, they have to give you time and a half. But it's only a 3-week thing and you have one. And like the way they talk about it all is like, yes, you've managed to wring every last dollar and free minute out of like this job. That is like everyone I know is like, well, the thing about being an HVAC engineer is 1 year in, you're already making 44K. You know, like everyone has.
Yeah.
And it's, and like parents talk about the scams that their kids have going on. Like, everyone's comfortable with that on Long Island. It's like, you know, David's a dentist, but he does still do weekends at his old dental school. And he's getting paid double. And, you know, it's like all this shit. And he's like, dude, he keeps a residence at Hofstra so that he can blah, blah. And like, you're like, what? Who cares? But it matters so much to those people.
It
and I
matters
miss that.
So much. It's like, so Justin's got an in at the Welders 99. And I'm telling you, once he gets past journeyman at Welders 99, that's it. You're making 50K. You're working 6 hours a day max. You can't stare into the acetylene torch more than 2 hours at a time. And they take it. It's like all these conversations that I've had with you. It's like, wait, has Justin like has never expressed to me that he wanted to weld? And now it's
right. And it's like, and they give him a company car, and then he gets this. He gets a gas card. And he can't really use it for his own car, but he can drive the van on the weekends if he wants and save himself gas money. That's money in the pocket. Like, that's the way everyone in my family and everyone I know, we always joke that there's a network of my mom's friend. Everyone's like, actually, my mom's friend knows a guy over there.
Oh, that can hook that's big. This guy that lives down the street from my mom, I don't want to, I'm going to change his name, but not his nickname. So we call him Mob John. He's got a different first name, but we literally call him Mob John because he's like from Sicily, not a citizen. He's about like 50 something, very racist guy, but also like nice to you, but like we'll just say the most out of pocket shit. My mom is friends with him for whatever weird reason. I'm not sure. Doesn't have any form of like real income that anybody can discern. He says he works in real estate, but he's always home. And he drives his wife doesn't drive, he drives her everywhere. And he just like has a lot of cash on hand. I don't know. Like, that's just a vibe that's out there.
There are five people like that on my mom's block. Like in the Wantagh Belmore area. She like the dude who lives across the street from my mom has like a house that now has like had added two stories in the course of like the 10 years that my mom's been living there. And this dude, and everyone in the neighborhood knows he bought his house for cash. Like that's how long he bought it. My dad was like, where does a guy like that get cash like that, huh?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. He has a lot of cash, you know? And it's like that. This dude now has a hot tub. He has a like F-350,
oh, yeah,
a sports car, a family car, all in this like, and his house is visibly three times the size of everyone else's. My mom's friend around the block owns a construction company and has built like two tiers on top of there. It's like the most Long Island shit is to not leave your neighborhood is just to like blowing your fucking house up more and more and like repaving the driveway and adding an above ground pool and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. Like my neighbors across the street, it's like there's just like three generations of the family living in the house. What they do is like, you like dig out the entire basement and that becomes a house. And then you blow it out. You put a whole extension on the top of the house. Now you've got another house on top of the house and you just make your property like this quickly mushrooming McMansion.
Yeah. And I think part of that is how expensive property tax is on Long Island, where crazy. People are like, I'm not moving to Manhasset. I'm not moving to Brentwood because I can afford it now. I'd rather just stack another fucking thing on top of my house. And then also on Long Island too, you have way more connections. Everyone has way more connections in the contracting world where it's like, bro, my cousin Ronnie will put a whole fucking second floor on the house, he says, for six G's. You know, it's like, wait, no, that can't be good.
That was one of my summer jobs was my next door neighbor had like a contracting company. And he was like, you want to make some extra money? I'll pay you in cash. And I'd set tile for a summer. I didn't know how the fuck to set tile, but I was like setting tile for a summer. And he did a great job.
My uncle was a landscape. He owns his own landscaping company. I worked for them in the summers before I became a lifeguard, you know, blowing leaves or whatever. And then eventually he like started doing construction in the winter. And my uncle, God bless him, nice guy, hard worker, never did construction before this, but he would still hire me for like a cash payment and be like, all right, we got to sheetrock all these walls. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing. He's like, yeah, dude, me neither. We'll figure it out. I'm like putting the fucking whole walls in a dude's house. It's like, we're just going to fucking drop the ball here.
Winning season returns at my bookie. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means insane props, epic bonuses, and the craziest cross-sport wagers. Bet with the best this NFL season for your chance to win big. At MyBookie, winning season means watching live sports and betting live sports all season long. Rejoice! The NFL has returned. Ooh, can't tell you what that means to me. But that means action-packed Sundays and huge cash prizes for you. Get in on the action. Use promo code MIGHTY and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Bet with the best this NFL season for your chance to win big. Use promo code MIGHTY and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today, only at MyBookie. New players get up to $1,000 in free play. And remember, MIGHTY lets you double your first deposit.
ABC, CBD.
Feels, baby. Hit me right in the feels. F-E-A-L-S. Premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. What does CBD do? Come on, it's feels. It naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. All you got to do is place a few drops of feels under your tongue, and you feel the difference within minutes. Are you new to CBD? Well, guess what? Feels has a CBD hotline to help guide you through your personal experience. I, on the other hand, like to take a few drops before bed paired with some THC tincture and then a few drops in the morning before I have my cold brew. I find that it helps reduce stress and helps me go to sleep. And I'm not positive exactly how the science of that works, but for me, that's all I can tell you. There's no high, there's no hangover, there's no addiction, and it's a membership. So you join the community and you get feels delivered to your door every month. You save some money on every order and you can pause or cancel anytime. So, become a member and get 50% off your first order. So do yourself a favor, go to feels.com/mighty and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. If you're not even sure how CBD works, you could use call the CBD hotline and it'll help guide your personal experience. So, Feels has me feeling my best every day and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/mighty and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/mighty to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/mighty.
I have to read you this letter that my girlfriend wrote. It's a platonic letter. She's a huge fan of yours. let me know where I should read it. If I should read it now or read it at the end, but I have to read it.
Let's read it now. This is...
okay. Here we go. Hi, Gabrus. You don't know me, but you are one of my best pals. I listen to more hours of your podcast than probably anyone, and I think you are a delight. Thank you for making trips to Long Island with Jason exciting. We get to ride the Long Island Railroad and hear all the stops. Massapequa Park. Fuck yeah. We get to visit the beach from Gabrus's glory days as a lifeguard. I'm in. I can't wait to go to My Hero. We tried to go last time, but we didn't have the chance. Also, thank you for making me seem interesting. I've picked up fun facts from your pods that I pepper into conversation to seem cool. The post-game drinking rituals of rugby players. The best way to make garlic bread. How many people in Hollywood share the same birthday? That was fascinating to me as well. And what happens when you drink too much at Oktoberfest? Schlud. Your friend and shithead, Christina.
Wow. Holy shit. Christina. Oh, man. This really, I feel weirdly like a podcast cuck in a way, knowing that. No, knowing that you are her boyfriend is also a podcaster is a very.
When I told her, I was like, yeah, I've been trying to go on Gabrus's pub. She's like, what? Ask him about this. Ask him about rugby. Talk to him about this. Now, his mom calls him Jonathan.
That's so amazing. Well, tell her I said thank you for listening. That means so much. And when this is all over, if the three of us, four of us, my wife should come, get to go to all Long Island together, I think it'll be a dream come true. Let's go down to Field 6 and see how the brown shirts, how the tan shirts, and how the lifeguards are doing down there.
I can't wait to go back to Field 6. We actually did. We were out there in February before all this happened, and we drove down there just to hang out. And I was actually shocked at the amount of people that are down in Field 6 in the middle of the wintertime just walking around.
Dude, yeah. Me and a friend used to drive down to Jones Beach and he had like a DVD player in his car and we would just like watch Step Brothers and smoke weed like at the beach in his car in the middle of winter. Just be like, oh, we can go park there and like it's no one's going to bust our balls and be like, and have that little in-dash DVD player be like, let's hang out and watch a movie. We like let a car run for 90 minutes in a parking lot.
You got to let it run. I mean, so much of Long Island, my Long Island experience was like, what is a parking lot where we can hang out? Like, is it the 7-Eleven? Is it the high school? Like, where are we going that we can just literally hang out for 4 hours at a clip?
Let's talk about this, because I thought it was like a very, it might be a more universal thing than I think of, but like, it was it might be generational too. Like, I think.
Yeah, it might be.
I think we're around the same age and we're probably the last generation whose parents were like, yeah, just come home whenever, like, just leave for 8 hours, please. Like, you know,
yeah.
I think nowadays everyone's like, where are you? Like, but we used to go, Martin Avenue was like a special needs school. I'm not sure what the right term is, but like a school for the learning, the people who learn different. It was a school that was often empty at night. We partied there. We partied at our high school. We would hang out in the 7-Eleven parking lot on Newbridge Road doing Hey Mister, trying to get someone to buy us beer. And then, because like no one hung out at our houses, like no one had like a house where parents were gone ever at this age, but lots of bringing a 12-pack or tall boys or 40s to a fucking park or a yard or a empty lot or an area in Freeport we called the industrial area. Like it would just be like where there's like six factories. It's like we can go stand by the factories. No one ever bothers us there. And it was like just a weird time in my life where it was like every Friday and Saturday night for like, I don't know, 4 years I drank outside no matter what the weather was.
Yeah, that's what we would do. There was, our spots were the 7-Eleven on Hempstead Turnpike.
Well, then yeah, what town did you grow up in? Where are you from?
So I grew up in Bethpage, but it was culturally Levittown is what I tell people, because it's like basically like Levittown was like the famous town from around there. Now because of PGA and stuff, like Bethpage is, people know it because there's a golf course over there. But I usually tell people Levittown because that's where my high school is.
Levittown is sort of like the famous, like, you know, attempt at redlining suburbs and giving white people homes.
And, yeah. An absolutely successful attempt. It worked like gangbusters, you got to say. Like, it really did. Congrats to all of them who redlined and separated various towns on Long Island, and specifically in Nassau County. They absolutely crushed it. It worked, let me tell you.
Long Island is insane how diverse it is from, like, if you look at the county as a whole. But if you drive like neighborhood to neighborhood, it is.
Oh my God.
I forget the expression someone used. It's not a melting pot, but it's a tossed salad. It's like, no, you're in the tomato section right now. Like you're in, this is like the black the black town, not even like neighborhood. It's like,
yep.
It goes like, this is a black town, a Spanish town, white town, Jewish town. And it was just like divided up like that. And I did not know that was weird for the longest time.
I think the first time I really realized that it was fucked up was when I went for some reason to Garden City. I think I can't remember why, but Garden City is like just across the road from like Hempstead, which is the black area of Nassau County right there. There's several, Hempstead being one of them. Freeport is another one. But it was like, oh, it's literally across the street and everything changes. You cross the street.
Yeah,
Garden City has like the fuck happened here?
It has like Beverly Hills vibe. It has like different coding for laws. Sure. Like they have like weird rules about their high school. So like that, they can use like, they have like a BOCES high school that they put like low income people in. But then those low income students are allowed to participate in sports. So Garden City has like the weirdest version of loopholes where it's like, yeah, we're an all white town, but we let the kids from the athletes from around it's so fucked up.
It's extremely fucked up. And Levittown, you absolutely feel that energy. 100% you feel that energy. Like it's like all ex or current cops. A lot of firemen, like people with those kind of like county jobs who work, or city jobs who then were like, the city is too black or brown or whatever, yeah. And you've decided to come to Long Island. And they reacted with animosity when black or brown people would be in the neighborhood. Like that was a very distinct energy of my time on Long Island.
Yeah, we're talking about people who, if someone moves into the neighborhood, everyone in the neighborhood is comfortable asking if they're black or what, like, oh, yes. So-and-so, oh, guess whose house is for sale? Well, I hope, blah, you're like, whoa. Well,
yeah, because the first, it's like, I don't know how old I was when I started hearing property value, because that was a thing that everybody, they care about two things, the property taxes and property value. It's my fucking house. Now my fucking house is going to take a hit. What the fuck? I just refinanced my fucking house to buy this boat. Now what the fuck is going to happen to my fucking house?
And
I don't have a problem with it, but if they move in, the whole neighborhood, what's going to happen?
If this person who's an engineer at Boeing who happens to be black moves into my neighborhood, they can afford the house in your neighborhood, which means like that's the thing that always drove me crazy. I was like, I grew up in Freeport. I was the like one of the like the 12 white families in like an all black and Hispanic neighborhood, all black and Hispanic school. And the vibe that changed when we moved to an all white, like I moved three towns over, Freeport, Baldwin, Merrick, Belmore. I moved to Belmore, and it was the vibe was insanely different.
It's insane.
There was like a neighborhood that like six black dudes lived in, and they called it Little Africa. Like,
it's
like
fucking wild
comfortably.
Shit.
And it's like, wait, what? And I was all, it was all new to me. I didn't even realize. And then even like my family being from Freeport, having like this new thing of like not wanting black people to move or brown people to move into the neighborhood, I'd be like, are you kidding? Like, I don't understand. We're the same. We lived in the same neighborhood they're moving from. These are old neighbors. How are we like different than them, except that we look different? And that's what drove me fucking up a wall. I was like, we just did this. They're doing the same thing as us.
Yeah, it's wild. My my stepdad during those years, my teenage years, was a NYPD detective. And he'd have his like his squad out like for parties in the backyard in the summertime. And I was like, I heard like slurs that I was like, whoa, I'd actually never, that's a new one. Like I've never heard, it's like some weird, like internal, like NYPD slur. That's why like, you know, the stuff that's happening now, it's like, listen, man, I've had these guys hanging out my house. It's like wild to listen to people like who have so much antipathy for the people that they police.
Dude,
it's wild shit.
It's like, I try to tell people that like the amount of people I know who are cops, like Long Island is very back the blue. Everything is
back
like
it.
the best job you can have on Long Island. Anyone who grew up in like the 80s and 90s knows that it's a Suffolk County police officer is the six figures to start and shit like that.
To start.
And that's like the highest thing you can aspire to. And I know tons of people who like all of my friends who became cops are people that I was like, or like the people I knew that became cops, all kind of people. I'm like, oh, really? So when when everyone was like, blah, 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 this about the NYPD, I'm like, yeah, no, I 100% believe that. Because I know in a racist group of people, or people with the wrong ideas, I should say, because it's not all racist, but people who have the wrong ideas in that group, often the one with the worst ideas is the one who becomes a cop. And it's like, none of us should be cops. And you, you're the one who's, okay, never...
1,000% should not be cop, and they like get away with. I mean, my brother got hit by a drunk off duty cop when he was like in junior high school. Got like knocked, like flipped over the front of the car. Was riding his bike, and then he flashed his tin. The cops let him go. They just let him drive. They let him leave. They let him leave the scene.
Yeah, dude. Cops on Long Island can get you out of shit that like they're not involved. Like if they just choose to be like, just let Jason go. Hey, I'm walking by. I'm a cop. I could, and like cops, exactly. They just listen. It's like this weird, like, I mean, yes, it's the thin blue line. We know what it is, but it's crazy when you benefit from it. Like,
it's very wild when you benefit from it. A couple of times I was like, yeah, my dad is my stepdad's he's in at Bronx, like precinct, whatever it was. And then like make a call. I like, who the fuck are you even on the radio with? And we got away with shit a couple times. Nothing bad, but like a couple times where it's like,
yeah,
you're
not
hanging
like
out at the
they're not letting
yard.
You walk. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're like, well, that was like all we needed it for was like in case you got pulled over or drinking in the schoolyard. Be like, actually, my friend's dad is a cop and he's a cat. Like, you know. And then, were you one of those kids whose parent or was a cop or step parent was a cop that let you like you got. You believed you had a get out of jail free card? Because I had a friend whose dad was like a lieutenant, and he drove 90 miles an hour in his Toyota Camry, like everywhere. He like rolled through stop signs, did whatever he wanted. He was like, worst case scenario, I just say like, my dad is this police captain or whatever. And it's like, that's so awful.
We didn't have it. It wasn't like to that level, but my stepdad was like, gave my mom his like PBA shield. He's like, if anything happens, you get any trouble, you just flash this. You tell him who I am. Here's the little PBA shield, and that's, I was like, holy shit, look at this.
Yeah, that's some real, that feels like power when you get, you under, I totally understand, like, when, and I've been so anti-cop on the podcast lately, I can't imagine why, but when you're like 10 or 12, being a cop does seem fucking unreal. It's like, I get a gun, right. You can like, you get to drive fast, sirens, the law, it makes total sense, but I don't understand people who don't grow out of that. The second you're 14 and you're chased out of a fucking football field for drinking with your friends by a cop who's like super aggressive and shoves you to the ground or like is screaming fuck you or at you while they chase you or whatever. The second that happens, that's when you realize like, oh, wait a minute. These guys are fucking assholes. We had a Officer Krueger. I don't know if it was his real name or not, but it was this bald white dude, Nassau County PD, who was so fucking hard. And he talked to us like he was a fucking occupying force in Afghanistan. Like the way, all right, motherfuckers, get on. Everyone get out. And we're like, fuck you, man. Like, and that's when you get disillusioned where you're like, oh, I'll never do that. And then any of your friends who stick with it, you're like, yeah, that's a problem.
Well, so much of it, like, we've been talking about how, like, everybody on Long Island is running some kind of low-level scam. I honestly, like, the PD is kind of that because, you know, what's the talk you get when you have a family member that's in the PD or, like, someone's talking it up? They're like, listen, you work 15 years, you retire with, like, half benefits and half your salary. You go do something else. You got this incredible pension. It goes for life. Anything ever happens to you, like, you're good. And then you retire at like 40. You do whatever you want with the rest of your life. And that's what the appeal is.
That's so real. And also, I think, like, we were saying, like, everyone in Long Island thinks they're in the mafia, and the closest I think you can get to, like, the mafia these days is becoming a cop, where it's like you then are above the law and people defend you no matter what. You have a weapon, you know, you have a homeboys that got your back. It is like La Casa Nostra, and it makes sense that Long Islanders are drawn to that. I mean,
oh yeah,
NYPD is like a great, great job, whether they're good at it or whatever. Getting that job is a good thing for a person. Like, they can make money. Bad for society, bad for people who live in New York City. But so you see how the appeal is, like, but the idea that you live in, like, Long Island, in Levittown, and then you work in, like, the Bronx is dangerous to me. Because you're like,
especially you hear people talk about it. It is like an occupying force. They and this is obviously only my personal interaction with my stepdad and his cohort, but they would just, like, talk about the people they police with, like, extreme derision. Like, oh, you see, they're driving Mercedes up there. They're, like, ripping off welfare, like, that kind of shit, like, real Fox News shit.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard cops say things to the effect of, like, you know, they say no comprende inglés, but then the second you walk away, you hear them speaking English to each other, and you're like, what? Who can? And then it's like... Maybe you shouldn't be a cop in an all Spanish neighborhood in New York City. If people who speak Spanish should work there.
Yeah, what do you think? Maybe.
Like, it's like they don't even speak the same language as me. It's like, yeah, no. Imagine how they feel. They don't have a gun.
Yeah.
A guy you don't understand is standing in your fucking hallway of your building telling you stuff, and he has fucking full sleeves and a gun, and you're supposed to, like.
That's why when I was a kid, like, when I hit the age where I could take the Long Island Railroad into the city, like, by myself, I would go as much as I could. I loved hanging out in the city and just, like, being out of that kind of environment for a while and just being somewhere more diverse where it wasn't like you didn't feel like this extreme hostility to, like, other people. And, like, for me, you know, like, non-white Asian person.
You are not white.
I am a Filipino person. But it's like you get when those conversations happen, it's like you feel like you're being asked to agree with it. And it was just like extremely awkward, weird feeling to be, like, friends with people or have my friend's parents, like, say shit just, like, openly in front of you and be like, fuck, I am not white. I am aware of it. You're treating me like I'm in on this thing. And I'm just, like, not, you know, like, and it was a really shitty feeling. And so, like, as soon as I could be like, you know, I'm just going to not hang out here. That's what I would try to do, is, like, hang out in the city.
I've been talking about this a lot with some Long Island friends and some other, like, small friends from small towns that ended up in cities that are, you know, I don't know what there should be a term for someone where, like, one person in the family is now liberal and everyone else is the one person who left. There's a vibe, like, I left my hometown, a lot of people didn't, and there's some weird parallel, I think, because Long Island has a good example with New York City being maybe a place, one of the most sought after travel destinations for people all over the world, whether it's America, all over the world, they want to go to New York City. The only people in the world who have no desire to go to New York City are Long Islanders. They live a fucking 100%. Half hour away, and they're like, we have a nice restaurant here in town. We got a Chinese food place that's great. We got this. I'm not getting on the train, and then there's a gay guy. There's a guy with his dick hanging out. Like, the way they talk about, like, every gay dude has their ass hanging out. Every black dude has got a gun, and they're blowing weed smoke in your face. It's like, dude, and like, oh, and then there's something fundamentally different about people, and I'm going to just lump us together here as I wasn't into the city because of the pace, but the idea of going into the city and being like, they have 400 restaurants. Like they have, oh, you like a movie theater? Well, we have like 11 movie theaters. One is playing art movies. It's like all the shit I liked about Long Island, where it wasn't about like, I didn't like Levittown the best. I like the beach and then like all these cool little, and then the fact that we had this curiosity or this desire for something bigger or different, that we sought it out in New York City. Like I lived back home in Long Island for like 11 months after college. And I wanted to do it for as long as possible because I was a PA at VH1. I was making no money. But it was just working in the city and living on Long Island was heartbreaking to me because going into the city where it was all happening, right? You'd be like,
it's
dude,
all happening.
They got these bars. The women are fucking beautiful. I saw a 6'2" black woman. She like I'd never seen that in Long Island. You know, like the things you would see, you'd be like, and just for like a heteronormative boy, it's just like absolute smoke shows everywhere. Like everyone's the hottest person ever. Dude, everyone's stylish. Everyone's interesting. The music playing at like,
oh,
you can walk down a street and hear 11 different types of music from 11 different bars, something you would never hear in Long Island. And to me, I had to move out. I had to live off credit card debt. I had to be an idiot financially, even though I still was commuting 40 minutes from Williamsburg to Midtown rather than 55 minutes from Belmore to Midtown. But the fact that I wanted to do that, I think, is what fundamentally makes me different than everyone in my family and a lot of my peers from there.
Yeah, Long Island is the kind of place where you either stay forever or you know immediately, as soon as you become like a conscious person who's like reflects on their own life, that you know immediately that you want to leave. I think the most emblematic example of that thing that you're talking about, like that kind of like, why would you want to go into the city thing? This feeling that Long Island people have, even though they probably work in the city, is that when you go to Penn Station at rush hour to get up back on the Long Island Railroad and go back wherever, you can buy right on the track, like tall, like huge cans of fucking beer that are like a foot and a half tall, and everybody is just getting shithoused on the way home because they're just like, oh my fucking God, that whole thing is over. Now I'm going to buy two fucking huge tall boys in a paper bag, and I'm going to get fucked up on this 45-minute train ride home. And that is just like, that is what everybody does.
Yeah, it's great. Like, it's great. I did that commute for a year working at, like, it was slightly off hours because it was TV. So I was in a little later than a lot of people and home way later than a lot of people. But the vibe was always the same. It was like everyone had giant Dunkin' or Starbucks coffees on the ride in and then giant beers on the way home. I Rose's Pizza and Pasta, one of my favorite places in New York City. It's just right in Penn Station.
Yeah.
They used to do, like, you could get like a big gulp, like a 60-ounce cup of, like, you can get it with like Sam Adams. Like, they had like 11 beers on tap and this is like 2004, 2003, 2004. I would get like a 60-ounce Sam Adams with like a straw in it, and it's like unwieldy to hold, and it's like arguably hot by the time you get to the back half of it. But to get that much beer for like $4.25 on the ride home,
unreal.
And then you get in your car and you're like, your car is a half mile from your house because you live close to the train station, but you're like, this is a dangerous drive I'm doing. I'm going a half mile, but I'm too drunk to drive.
Yeah, I remember when I first started taking those trains, I was like, wait a second, you can just buy like literally right here on the fucking track, like the biggest beer I've ever seen, and people just get fucked up? Yeah. Okay. Like, all right.
Last April, me and my wife and I were like, we've always wanted to see a Billy Joel concert at MSG. Like, of course, that's like a Long Island fucking bingo checkboard. But so my mom had gone, we talked, and she's like, I'll buy tickets for you guys if you'll like fly in and make a weekend. And we started like randomly this one weekend, we were supposed to be in for a wedding and Billy Joel was playing. And we were like, Mom, what about, this is like 4 months in advance. Like, Mom, what about April? She's like, yeah. And my wife is like, oh, we should stay in the city. And I'm like, no. We're staying at my mom's house. She's like, no, we should stay in the city. All our friends live in the city. That's where we met. That's where, and I'm like, no, we have to commute into the concert. And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, just wait and see.
You'll see.
And it was a fucking highlight. We're all on the train. We get on the train platform. It's me, my two brothers, everyone's girlfriends or wives, and my mom, just like the seven of us. And all me and both my brothers each separately brought so much fucking alcohol. Like, it was like, it's like a 50-minute ride, but my brother was like, I brought a six-pack of beer. I'm like, I made four huge vodka and sodas in like Panera cups that my mom has at the house for whatever reason. And we got fucking gas. And my wife's like, I'm so glad we took the Long Island Railroad. And I go, no, this isn't even why we took it. You'll see why we took it when the concert lets out. And you go from Madison Square Garden with everybody who's at Billy Joel immediately into Penn Station, immediately onto a train. Everyone is hammered, singing. People have booze
bottle
for the
bottle of wine. Bottle red.
And it was
that bottle of roses.
I said to my wife, I'm like, the vibe is going to be unreal. And it was what Long Island to me in is a nutshell. It felt a little scary, but all in all was just people trying to have fun. But there is that element of fear about, and sorry, we talked about this a second ago. I just want to jump back to it. The whether you want to stay for life or leave immediately upon becoming conscious. I've now like come around to like another level of consciousness where I'm like, I can appreciate Long Island. I have like this weird distance from it where I'm like, obviously anyone who listens to my podcast or shit I do, I talk about it relentlessly. But I've come back to it in a way, and now moving to LA helps even more or hurts even more, where I'm like, this Long Island FOMO and the pandemic is hitting even harder. Like now I associate it with seeing my family and my nephews. And I just have this like weird pining for Long Island that I'm going through right now.
And I'm feeling the same thing now too, because my, you know, my godmother and my godfather who lived in the same complex as us in Queens. I mean, I've known them my whole life. They live on Long Island now. My brother lives like 8 minutes away from my mom and the house we grew up in. He just had a kid, so I have a nephew. And my mom's sending me pictures like literally every day of like them doing stuff. They're in the backyard, barbecuing, whatever.
There's
it is,
no
like, all
coronavirus.
That shit.
There's no coronavirus on Long Island for some reason, somehow, according to my family. Dude, this is weird. One of my brothers still lives with my mom. My other brother does live in Belmore, 8 minutes away from my mom with his kids. Yeah. It's so crazy. And they're all together. My mom has a pool in her yard. It's like the summer is them taking pictures of my. And I don't even like, I didn't like living there. And I get stressed after 48 hours of being there. But I'm craving just going back and like seeing everyone and getting the fuck out of there. But it's not going to happen anytime soon.
I know. That part of it really sucks. Do you ever think so? Like, we've both kind of had the same kind of like arc, and then you live on Long Island, then you go live in New York for a while, now we're in LA. Like, you're a person, you like are working in entertainment and you know people like who are doing it too. Like, I know people at different levels who are doing it. Sometimes it's, you go back and you're like, oh yeah, so my friend who's like he's a producer on this and blah, blah, blah. And then I'll catch myself saying, I'm like, man, what the fuck am I even, how did this even happen that I'm saying shit like this? But at the same time, like, it's totally, these are like totally like normal jobs that you would have out here because it's like an industry town. But it just sounds like I'll catch myself from that perspective of like a kid on Long Island. I'll be like, what the fuck am I even talking about right now?
I know, dude. I remember when my brother, when I first lived in my second apartment in Brooklyn, when I was living in Red Hook with my wife, and my brother's like, I'm like texting with my brother. I'm like, I'm off to go to the cafe. He's like, oh, so you can have Wi-Fi and your lattes. And it was like, oh my God, yes. Who have I become? And then like an hour later, I came back around. I was like, wait a minute, Wi-Fi? You can't mock me for like wireless internet. But that is like the Long Island attitude. It's like, oh, let me guess. You can't have your fucking, you got to go to the cafe to get the internet. And you're like, yeah, wait, no, that's okay. That's city life. Yeah.
That's another great point. People don't really bust balls out here. Like, that feels like a very New York, Long Island thing. Is like,
bro,
but is busting balls. When I was out there with my girlfriend, I was busting my godfather's balls. I was busting Freddie's balls, and then I actually legitimately said, "I'm just busting his balls." And she's like, "I can't believe that." One, that you just make fun of each other, and two, that like you just sincerely used the term busting his balls. I'm like, yeah, that's what we bust each other's balls out here.
That's this is what I said to my wife the other day. I'm like, I think everyone on Long Island is 10% funny or higher. I mean, they're obviously like, right. We got Eddie Murphy, Seinfeld, John Gabris, a lot of very funny people coming out of there. But I think there's an attitude on Long Island where you kind of have to have a thick skin no matter what, because everyone, like, you know, like somebody will say like, hey, nice haircut to you, like as a roast in a fucking deli. Like someone you don't know might be like, yeah. Oh, cool bandana, dude. And you're like, hey, wait, what? And you're like, oh, it's just like, the life of Long Island is like you have to be a little tough. My family is relentless with each other. And when my wife first experienced it, she was like, you guys are brutal to your mom. And I'm like, no, she's the best, man. She takes it so hard. My mom is like the most self-deprecating and can take so much shit just because she grew up with four boys and then a man around her who is just like relentless. And that's just what I grew up in. And the vibe is different out here. I feel like I offend people in conversation so frequently. I'm like, what the fuck is that hat, dude? It's
And then obviously you see someone.
I thought you knew it was weird.
It's the same thing. Like, you really gotta. The first time I was like, okay, this is a different energy. My first New Year's here in LA, I was at my manager's house. He's like, yeah, come over. You're like new in town. So, and we're watching the ball drop and some commercial for a movie comes on. I forget what it was. And I'm about to like, be like, look at this fucking piece of shit. And before I could get it out, I hear like tapping on the side of the champagne glass. Hey everybody, this is Molly's. That's Molly's movie coming out. She just produced, and I was like, oh, wow, yeah. I almost fucked that up. Whoa, okay.
I mean, the thing you have to, I've created an environment around myself where everyone is just like, that's Gabris, he's a ball, but like that way I have that like escape clause for when I eventually go like, all right, nice try, Book Smart or whatever. It's like, I actually am the writer of Book Smart. You're right. Like, got it. Sorry. Yes.
Right. Sorry. Yep. I love the emotional bond between the two main characters. That was really well done.
Yeah. Ball busting is a thing. I mean, I feel like also, again, it might be a generational thing because bullying hit so hard. And like,
yeah, that's true.
I feel like ball busting was a weird defense mechanism to like train you for bullying. And like, I think that's kind of like low key what my dad might have been doing by bust. Like, I was bullied at school, but it never hurt me because my dad was the meanest and the funniest. Like, he would just like absolutely. Was a legendary ball buster where my friends all loved him and I hated him. Like, that's like the perfect example of a ball buster. Is like, I hate this fucking guy. And my friends would be like, your dad's hysterical. It's like, I don't think he's funny when he's making fun of me. Like, but your friends love that shit. And it's
it's a survival mechanism for real. It absolutely is. Like, I, you know, like as I think there was like two other Asian kids in my class there's like one black kid and a couple of Latino kids, but that is pretty much like Irish, Italian, and Jewish kids.
Yeah.
And so we got, you know, you just got bullied and like you had to be able to really like handle the shit. It's like now when people are like, you know, like how many times have I heard like the fucking Chinese eyes thing? It doesn't even, that shit, I don't care about it. Like, yeah, I had to be able to like really roast back and then people would be like, ah, hey, this fucking kid's hilarious. Then they leave you alone. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's how you got through it.
It's that weird, I certainly experienced, like, a lot of elements of my life were this, where it's like, whether it was Long Island, playing sports, or doing Wild and Out, like, the level of racial shit was always like, you would, like, say to Tim De La Ghetto's face, like, this fucking Asian motherfucker, you know, whatever, and then he would be like, yeah, and then hit you back with, like, you know, some fucking ramen reference, and you'd both laugh, and it's like, that vibe is gone from society. Like, that is not...
That's gone. Does not exist now. The other thing is, like, so, you know, like, I'm Filipino, and so I didn't even have the benefit of being, like, a famous Asian nationality. Like, nobody knew what the fuck that was at the time. Like, I'd say that, I'd be like, what? You were just Chinese. Like, people would just be, like, that's it. They're the Korean kid in class with Chinese. Yeah.
in 90s, and we weren't saying Asian yet either. It was just like, he's Chinese. We weren't even saying like Asian American, Chinese American, Filipino. It was just like, this dude is Chinese. It's like, actually, I think he's Mexican. It's like, you know, like, I feel like Filipino kids in my school, people would be like, is he Spanish or Chinese? And he'd be like, yo, I'm neither, dude. Like, come on. Like, just asking the most, I'm not from Spain or China. I'm from Bethpage. I'm born here. That was like always the craziest fucking, that we had a dude, my friend was half Asian, and it's all we talked about to him, like anytime he was around, was just like the fact that his mom was Chinese was like so crazy to us. Like, just like, I mean, it would be like, this is how in our friend group we had like a black friend and a Spanish friend, but like the half Chinese guy was the craziest. Like, we couldn't wrap our heads. Like, it was like mystical to us. We could, like, it's so offensive in hindsight. Like, it was not from hatred, but from genuine curiosity and love.
Just like, that was the energy. I think, like, I took like Taekwondo when I was a kid for a couple of years, and I legitimately think I did it because it was like people were just asking me if I knew if I knew Kung Fu all the time. I was like, fuck, I guess I got to. When my mom was like, oh, there's this Taekwondo place opened, Parks Taekwondo opened up down the street. I was like, yeah, let's fucking do it. Whatever. Like, people are asking me all the time. I might as well learn how to do it, I guess.
I took Taekwondo in Freeport from a like 60-year-old ex-Marine who learned Taekwondo after he stayed in Korea after the Korean War. Just a guy who has USMC, the United States Marine Corps, tattooed on his knuckles, is teaching you like, all right, front kick. And he's like this old Ginzo. It was like the most Long Island shit ever. He's like this old Ginzo with a Korean flag in his garage. And he like had a carpet down. And me and my dad and my brother all took, my dad took the adult classes and my brother and I took the kid classes out of this dude's garage. That's how like,
yo,
that's the most Long Island 90s shit ever, by the way, is because karate studios was huge in the 90s, especially in the suburbs.
Fucking gigantic, dude.
If you go through the valley now, they're like, fucking, obviously this is where Karate Kid takes place, because there's a dojo or a martial arts supply store like every three blocks in the valley.
Yeah, Taekwondo was like, for some reason, just blew up when I was a kid. I went to this guy, I think his name was like Chohan Park. He was like the U.S. Taekwondo Olympic team coach.
Yes, yes. He had Parks. They're like Tiger Shulman's and Parks were the
Tiger
two
Shulman's
big,
and like, Parks. And that was an absolutely huge thing. Getting the belt, freaking breaking the boards. We were like, oh shit, I'm doing it now.
Yeah. And then did this ever happen to you? Like, I was like a brown belt in Taekwondo, and then I got like the shit kicked out of me at school. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, and I was like, just a dude who developed like, you know, 1 year ahead of me and had like belly hair and fucking muscles. He like whips my fucking ass in the hallway. And I'm like, I don't know about Taekwondo. I might even be too scared just to be like in fist fights.
I got in a fight like mid my career of Taekwondo. We had like this vacant lot we called the cornfield that was like next to our school, and that's where all the fights would take place. And I got in a fight, and it was like there was a split second where I'm like going through all, okay, like a block with this, and then it's just like, I don't know, time just sped up. I was like, I don't have time. I'm just gonna keep flailing away. I don't know what I'm doing. All the moves are gone. None of this shit works. Like,
you're going full, like you're playing button mash Tekken or whatever. You know, you're just like, you're just like throwing one punch over the board. You're like, this might win. Yeah.
I'm just like doing anything. Like, I legitimately started crying in the middle of it. It was like, I don't know what the fuck is happening.
I've been in, this is something that's different for a lot of people too, is like, I got into the New York comedy scene in like my early to mid 20s and met a lot of like theatery type kids and kids from all different places who had never been in a fist fight before. And I was like, oh, was like your school different? Like, cause like most kids in my school had been in a fight. Like,
oh yeah.
And like you saying the cornfield where the fights were is the most real shit ever. We had like the ashtray in junior high was where you would either go to smoke cigarettes or fight. And it was like just like this little hole in the fence where you'd go in and be like,
yeah that same exact vibe. Same exact thing.
Concepcion and Gabrus are supposed to fight at three. It's like, let's go watch or jump in if we're friends with one of the guys. Like, and I I've been in so many fights, a few where I've won, plenty where I've gotten my ass kicked, plenty where nothing really happened, but I would say I cry in 90% of them. Even when I win, you cry. Like, there's something about just being 15 and getting hit in the nose, or the anxiety and stress of getting to that level.
It comes out of nowhere. Like, you just really can't stop it. Like, I've been in a couple fights. One where I like won, no one was around, of course. Like, no one, it was just like some kid said some racial shit to me and we fought and I feel like I won. He might have a different, but I really feel like I won. And
he's
then
definitely
a couple
on a different podcast saying he won, right. But like, that's fine. Yeah.
And then a couple in the cornfields where it was like the same thing. Nobody really, like, we grappled around with each other. A couple shots got landed, but mostly it was just like two kids like holding on to each other's sweaters and stuff, and right, until people would break us up. But in every single time I cried. But you don't know you're doing it at the time. I was just like fucking like that, that kind of sound.
It's like adrenaline. In hindsight, you're just going full on adrenaline on your little 15-year-old body that's like barely able to handle looking at a girl in class without fucking, popping wood. And now you're like, I'm ready for combat. when you're in high school, that testosterone be hitting different all different. Yeah, like one dude you're standing next to is like, has a mustache and a deep voice, and you're like, I have A cups. You're going to fucking put the fucking work to me. I can't do a push-up. You have chest hair. I'm going to get fucking annihilated here.
You're like, we're 12. You're smoking and have a full-on fucking mustache and can buy beer. The other thing
was
like...
Yeah, the rumor is you like fucked a high school senior. You know, like there's always that kid.
Oh my God.
Like, yeah.
There was always
that
fucked
my aunt. Yeah.
There was like a fucking wild, I remember the wild rumors we had when we were kids. It was like, oh dude, they went in a fucking, one of them crazy ones was like, oh dude, three girls gave him a hand job in a tree house. I was like, what? Wait, what? Like one after another, he shot his load on their tits in the tree house. All of them, all three of them. I'm like, wait, what? How is that fucking possible? Fucking Danny went into the city and he fucked a stripper. I'm like, come on, that
to go back to Booksmart for a second, that moment when they go, you know why they call me AAA, right? It's like, and she's like, well, yeah, blah, blah. She's like, no, it's like, I can only hook up in my car. I live like with my dad. Like, and like all the shit. And it's like, I just remember so much shit. Like, we called this one girl Rainbow because allegedly she would put on different colors of lipstick to see how far. And we were so brutal to women based on rumors that we definitely created. Like, oh, she stuffs her bra. So we would like fake blow our nose and sneeze whenever she was like giving a presentation. We're like, oh, that's so fucked. Like,
We were terrible.
We were off. A kid who went to our school shit his pants. When he was a freshman in school, we screamed at him for his 4 years of school everywhere he went, like, shit your pants, bro. His mom was a hall monitor. He graduated, and my brother said, they still make fun of the hall monitor for her kid shitting his pants like 6 years ago or whatever. It's like, that's how fucked up high school kids are.
It was absolutely brutal. Shit would stay with you forever. And if you had a funny name... that was it. Like, it was, it was the shit. That was your nickname. And that was what you lived with literally like for fucking 8 straight years from like late grade school through middle school, all the way to high school, unless you fucking switched schools. Like, that shit just stuck.
We're talking to Concepcion and Gay Briss. So I was called Gay Boy by my teachers, dude. Like, they were literally like, I'd raise my hand in class and be like, Gay Boy? Like, that was my nickname on football, and like the coaches were also teachers. So it was just like, it spread. And gay, garbage, grab ass, garbus, like all these nicknames were, and the joke I make now is like, I was becoming one of two things at that moment, a comedian or a school shooter. I chose comedian, thank fucking God.
My school was brutal. I remember we'd have like, we'd have substitutes sometimes, and it would just be like, it was like lions circling like on the Serengeti looking for a weakness. It's like, can we break this person within the first hour of like whatever? Just like throwing shit at them, tacks on their chairs. I remember one time
testing the limits immediately, right? Like immediately, finding out the boundaries immediately. Yeah, yeah.
Immediately. There was one of our English teachers like sent a kid out and he slammed the door and like the PA, you know, like the thing that the announcements would come out of, like came off the wall and hit her in the head and knocked her out. Fucking whole class started cheering. And I think about it now, God. I'm like, yo, what the fuck were we doing? But people were like, yeah! Bro, it was just nuts.
The idea that high school, for some reason, I have such a soft spot in my heart for teachers now.
Oh,
but
my
the
God,
fact,
for,
when
for
I was
real.
In high school, it was us versus them, right?
It was felt savage.
Like, it was like, we can't let her have power over us. It's like, wait, no. We have to just listen for 40 minutes is all. No. We have to rip up the tiles in the back of the classroom every time she turns around and throw them out the window. That was something we did in this one class, was like systematically rip up the tiles whenever the teacher wasn't looking and throw them out. And so we had taken up like 40 of the tiles. And even the teacher was like, why did you guys do this? And we were like,
yeah, right. I don't know.
You should have been watching us the whole time. It's like,
I feel the same way. It's like, whatever. Listen, teachers should make like four times what they're making right now. They have one of the hardest jobs out there, and it's an absolutely vital job. But we were so mean. We had this. There was a there was like a water fountain in the back of one of the classrooms that, for some reason, like some fucking fluke of the plumbing, like you'd turn it on. It was on one side of the room. It would shoot up, hit the roof tiles, and then go all the way to the other side of the room and hit the windows. And every time the teacher would turn around, somebody would go back there and just like, and like just spray it.
Oh, that shit makes me so fucking happy. I just like that shit. This is not even about Long Island. I'm sure most schools do this, but there's like a level of like proud scumbaggery that comes out. I think that might be true for a lot of like major city suburbs.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of the guys I know who grew up outside of Boston have like a similar vibe, where it's sort of like, it's like we're proud that we're scumbags, but we're like, you know, intelligent scumbags. I can't really articulate what it is. It's like we're like empathetic scumbags is maybe like the answer. Like the pride you have of like, bro, I fucking took a dump in the potted plant at this girl's party in high school. It's like,
oh my
why
God.
Are you proud of that? Like that shit. Do you remember like when you got to go to a house party instead of like fucking drinking at Martin Avenue or the fucking Sump or whatever? Like the moment you get to do something like that, and you're like, holy shit, this is the future. And then you go to college and you're like, holy shit, I can like go to bars and like drink in my own house. Holy shit.
You know what? It took me a while to realize that people don't know what sumps are. Like a sump is just a thing you grow up with on Long Island. So the sump, for people who don't know, it's just a huge hole in the ground that's like a drainage ditch for like rainwater.
Yeah, and I don't fully understand how it works, but
I don't know how it works.
Has a fenced off hole where you hide pornography, lighters, and sometimes do fist fights with your friends. Or
We would set fires. We would hang out in there. We would absolutely hide porn mags like under logs. It was like a 2.5-3 acre lot that's just a hole.
Yeah.
And I would tell people about it like when I got in college and stuff. I'd be like, oh, the sump. We were hanging on the sump. We'd be like, what the fuck is a sump? What is a sump?
Yeah, I didn't know it was a Long Island only thing, or like, I guess maybe because we have a low sea level, we need something like that, right? Like,
thank you for bringing it to a scientific level, because I literally am still mystified.
I couldn't guess why, because I'm like, that's the only guess, is that it's an island that floods easily, so they need to blah, 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 or whatever. Yeah. Who fucking knows? Before we get out of here, do you have, I want to just run through some favorites. Do you have, like, a favorite Long Island restaurant or deli or pizza place, whatever
absolutely.
It might be?
I think my favorite place to just buy meats on Long Island, Swan Prime Meat. It's on it's on Wanta Avenue. It's the place we've been going since I was a little kid. They have those like Italian sausage rolls that come in the big roll and you wrap it up in the wax paper
with the one tooth. Yeah. I love that. The pinwheel, the sausage pinwheel.
Pinwheel. Throw that thing on the grill in the summertime, and that's like that is the smell of summer to me.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. I love that. Yeah, we had Ivoroni Brothers, I think, was our big like meat market / like get your cool expensive Italian shit from there. But I always talk about my hero on Jerusalem Avenue in Merrick is like one of the best delis I've ever been to. I'm sure you've heard about it from your girlfriend.
Yeah.
But I do miss the beaches. Long Island having that many beaches. And I've been all over the world. I've been to, you know, New Zealand and the Bahamas and been to all these fancy beaches, and they're all beautiful for different reasons. But there's something about Long Island beaches where the water is dark. Like you can't.
Yeah, it's green, dark green, gray, yeah. Black.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's because we have dark sand, which I think is like not a lot of people understand. So like it's hard to see, but it. There's something about the Long Island beaches where they still feel like they're for, I mean, as you go out further out east, they start to feel more and more exclusive, but they still feel like they're for everybody, despite fucking Moses's, you know, attempts at making the bridges too low for buses and shit like that and all that fucking Robert Moses racist fucking architecture shit. Yeah. It still feels like the beach is for everybody on Long Island. It's still $8 to $12 to get a car in there. Buses still drop people off at Field 4. And like, it's, there's something about those beaches when you go there. It's like, there are families there. It isn't about influencers. It isn't a bunch of people taking photos. Like, I mean, maybe it is now. It is 2020, but it's just, the vibe is different there. And I miss that. I miss that beach.
Yeah, you're so right. It is really a melting pot. Like LA beaches, maybe like Long Beach is kind of like that. I don't know. But like, yeah, there's something about maybe. The fact that, there's something about the fact that you could be like in Queens or whatever and jump on a train and then from there jump on a bus and all of a sudden be at this incredible beach with like tens of thousands of people from Long Island and New York. It really is like a real melting pot feel that you, it's hard to recreate. Coney Island kind of, but like Long Island beaches are incredible.
Coney Island kind of, but I think the thing Long Island has is like the, there's something about standing on standing on Jones Beach or any of the South Shore beaches, and if you look to your left and your right, there's hardly even any jetties or any construction. So it is just and then you're looking just like off the southern. There's not even anything visible south like of you. So you, there's this weird like you know you're on an island. You know you're a half hour from New York City, but there's something about being on the end of the world at that beach because it doesn't bend in because of the like the layout. It's so fucking parallel. It's so straight that there's no cove. You don't look to your right. Like sometimes in Malibu, you'll like look to your right and you can see like the town.
Right. There's
around,
like,
or a pier or something. At Jones Beach, it's like if you go out like 100 feet, there's nothing to your left or right for miles and miles and miles, which is
and
just a wild
still make it, and people still make a day of it. Like here, it's like if you go to the beach, you go to the beach for a couple hours, you come back. There, when you go to the beach, like people go like they're going to war with like four coolers of shit, all the furniture, a tent, three different umbrellas. Like they're fucking the super soakers. They're like ready to do the shit and they're ready to be out there for 12 hours.
And I think that has a lot to do with like SoCal versus Northeast weather, where it's like you have your summer and then even your summer is not all nice days because you get rain and then you have work days. So then you have like maybe, you know, 12 days a year that line up that it's nice weather and you're off or whatever. So you got to squeeze in like you're like, get the boogie board, get the Coronas. We're going to grill. We're going to make sandwiches. We're going to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner at the beach. You know what I mean? Like bring the radio. We're going to listen to the Yankee game. We're
absolutely.
Like, you know, like it's like we have get all the kids, invite the cousins. Like it's like got to be 40 because like you're dedicating this Saturday to the beach and you're going to get up at 7. You're going to get there by 8. You're going to leave at dark.
Oh, like, you got to get up early if you want one, a spot like near the water and two, like a good parking spot where you don't have to drag 500 pounds of stuff a half mile to the beach. You just got to get up early. You're getting up crack of dawn to do that shit.
If you end up going to Central Mall or Field 4 or whatever, you got to take the tunnel and all that shit. Like if when Field 6, the lot is once or twice, the you know, due to some like random delay, we'd be going and like Field 6 would be closed. And because we were only ever going from like 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., my dad would be like, well, and just like turn around if Field 6 is closed. We're right after we went through, just turn around and leave the beach. And this is something we prided ourselves on because once we moved from Freeport, we technically lived like you. We were zip code Wantagh, culturally Belmore. And we lived like just above Sunrise Highway, right near the Wantagh Parkway. So we used to time like door to door. We could get to like Field 6 parking lot in like 6 or 7 minutes from my mom's like driveway. And like that, we prided ourselves on like how close we lived to the beach. And then we would always just try to beat that record. Like I would leave myself with like 15 minutes of notice to get to work. And I mean, I'm sure the tan shirts had it too. We were punch cards, which was crazy. Yeah.
So the way I would get to work is I would drive. I would take my, before I had my car, I would bike down Wantagh Avenue all the way to the park that's there where the bike path starts, and then I would take the bike path all the way down the causeway to the thing. It was like
right across.
It was like a 12-mile bike. It was wild. Like after that summer, I had like muscles in my legs that I've never seen since before again. Like it was just an insane ride.
Bro, you just reminded me. That's what I want to do when I go back home. I want to ride the bike path again. I hadn't done that in forever. I did it like
it's a great ride.
It's a great ride. And then it lets you in the park at like Wantagh Avenue and Merrick Road, where that place, it's called Long Island Cheeseburger, but we called it Cheeseburger our whole lives because it had like the word written twice and the SNL sketch. So we called this place Cheeseburger. And to me, it was like this place that my mom would be like, we're not going to Cheeseburger, Jonathan. Get, you know, shut up or whatever. Like, we're going to get McDonald's or whatever. And then when I remember when I was old enough to have my own car, I'm like, we're going to Cheeseburger. I went and was like, absolutely mediumly fine. You know, and I was like, I built this up for like 7 years. And that was just the beginning of being let down by things I didn't know about for the rest of my life.
Dude, that was that's a fun bike ride. I remember one of my friends like had figured out how to sneak into the to Jones Beach Amphitheater through like the swamp off of the bike path. He had figured it out, and he was like, I can't take you because I legitimately don't want too many people to know how to do it. But then he took me one time, and they probably have changed it now. This has been a number of years. But he would like leave his bike at a certain area, go through like this legitimate swamp. Like he'd put on like a like rain gear and stuff because there's thorns and you're going through like all this like nettles. And then he would hop a wall that would basically be like where concessions is. And then he'd just like quick change and act like he was like working concessions and walk through and he'd be in. Oh, it was this unbelievable scam.
That's awesome. I'll tell you, the best version of that was working at Jones Beach when a cool concert was in. You had friends that worked at the Zacks Bay Beach, which is that bay right next to the amphitheater, mm-hmm. they'd be like, Gabrus, come on over. We're going out on kayaks with beers like after the beach is closed. And you would be able to get close enough to hear the music, but just be floating in the middle of the ocean, fucking slamming beers. It was a fucking, in the middle of the bay. It was a fucking awesome time.
This has been. Thank you for having me on this. This has been incredible.
Bro, are you kidding? Thank you for doing this, man. So I know you have a shit ton of stuff going on, but you also have a new podcast with Shay, right? You want to talk a little bit about plugs here for people to check out?
It's called The Connect. Shay picks a movie. I pick a movie. Then we talk about the theme and the different ways that they connect. And it's been fun. And I hope. And so check it out.
Yeah, that's really fun. Just to give a taste, the most recent one was movies to not watch on a plane, and it was La Bamba and what was
World
the
War World War Z
World War Brad Z
Pitt,
yeah
we're, the yeah. the Brad Pitt Plan B action zombie apocalypse movie World War Z, in which the scene in this being there's a zombie outbreak on the plane that's like leaving Israel and it crashes.
Oh, great fucking scene, great
unbelievable scene.
That movie's kind of low-key underrated somehow.
I agree.
I feel like I don't think it gets enough credit. It's really fun, and the idea of shooting a machine gun into a blob of zombies seems appealing, as even though I'm scared of guns and all that.
Same.
And you're at NetW3RK on... I'll tag you in all this shit when it comes out. But,
thank you so much.
Jason, thanks for doing this, bud. This was a blast, man. I'm glad we got to catch up and tell your girlfriend we should we'll do a Long Island, we'll take her on a Long Island tour together at some point.
She's gonna be absolutely thrilled. Thank you Johnny.
All right, I appreciate it. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum podcast.